Welcome to Chip Chat, an interview series that connects you with technology experts around the issues that industry is focused on today. And now your host, Allison Klein.
Welcome back to Intel Chip Chat. It's day two of the Intel Developer Forum at San Francisco. We're at the Moscone Center, and I'm Allison Klein, the host. I've got a couple guests that I'll be introducing in a second. I've got a couple of announcements before we get there. Yesterday, we had Intel's futurist, Brian Johnson, on, talking about the future of technology and steampunk, of all things, and how Intel's study of steampunk is helping us understand how humans like to use technology better. Brian made a great offer for our Chip Chat fans. If you're interested in learning more about this study, he's offered free copies of his book, Vintage Tomorrows. All you need to do is tweet me at TechAllison, that's TechAllyson, and we'll get you a free copy of the book as long as they last. Also wanted to give a shout out to my friend Will. Happy birthday, dude. Hope it's a good day. All right. Our first guests are Jocelyn DeGrantz-Graham, who's the founder of CloudNow, and Seema Jitani from Dell, who's also a member of the board of CloudNow. Welcome, guys.
Thanks, Allison.
So, Jocelyn, why don't we get started with you? Can you just introduce CloudNow, what it's about? We've had the folks from CloudNow on the program before, but just to remind our listeners.
So CloudNow is the nonprofit consortium of the leading women in cloud computing. And the mission of CloudNow simply is to promote women in technology. You know, there's a lot of organizations for women in tech. Typically, we see that they do a lot of isolationism, and they have very separate agendas from the actual industry conversation that's occurring. And so CloudNow very much differentiates itself on working together with our male colleagues to make sure that women are actively part of that conversation.
How long have you guys been in existence, and how many members are engaged in CloudNow today?
So we've been officially launched for 2 years in August. And in terms of the members and the affiliates, we have a following of several hundred. But of core, I would say, committee members, we have 40 to 50.
I think Intel's Regine Skillern is a member of CloudNow as well.
That's right. She's been a great advocate of women in tech and a great support for CloudNow.
Also a frequent guest on Chip Chat. Now, Seema, obviously, you know, one question that I have for you is, why do you think there's a need for CloudNow? Why is there a need for a women in tech organization? And what brought you into the organization?
So the need for CloudNow and the women in tech is a need based on numbers, right? There are much fewer women in the industry. And so this is basically kind of, okay, you know, conversations about support, about mentorship, about, you know, direction, information. That's what is driving these kinds of organizations.
So, you know, stop the presses. I thought this was going to be just a nice little happy interview about women in technology, but this week provided us a great
It was
topic.
An interesting, newsworthy week.
So TechCrunch, for those who missed it, a pretty exciting TechCrunch event, and exciting not in a good way. Jocelyn, do you want to just tell folks about what happened there?
Yeah, I'll tell. So the broad brushstrokes are that there were a couple of presentations that were really, they were very sexist. I don't think there's any other way that you can describe it. The first was an application called TitStare. Now, TitStare was a joke. So, and the presentation was meant to be funny. But unfortunately, the organization Black Girls Who Code, the girls and their mentors were there in the audience. So you've got children in the audience, you've got inappropriate presentations like TitStare, and then insult to injury, there was a second presentation.
Yes, it gets worse, people. Yeah. Can you believe that? That's not the worst thing that happened.
A second presentation called Circle Shake, and you can probably use your imagination what Circle Shake was about.
Right. I think that, okay, if as women we can, you know, understand that, okay, there'll be jokes, yes, but the most infuriating part, from my opinion, is that there were kids in the audience, and they don't need to be exposed to this kind of behavior.
You know, obviously, I read a report that said there was a 9-year-old girl in the audience who had been brought by her father.
Yeah.
He was out on Twitter talking about, way to go, guys, way to expose my daughter to what the technology industry is all about.
And he had been there for the exact opposite purpose. He wanted to demonstrate to his daughter just how fantastic it would be for her to get involved in tech as a career and as a point of encouragement. So that was his specific agenda for bringing his daughter that day.
Yeah, so TechCrunch, wonderful publication. You know, don't know what happened there in terms of the review of these presentations. But what's almost, they did issue an apology and talked about how they would change their practices. And I think, the things that they followed up with were spot on in terms of what we'd like to see from anybody who experiences something like that at their conference. So hopefully, they're taking this as seriously as their statements stay. But some interesting articles have followed. So, Seema, do you want to talk a little bit about what you've seen in the news on this?
Yeah, I think that the one article that one of my colleagues brought to light was from a leading publication called Forbes, and I would expect more from Forbes. A gentleman by the name of Tim Warstall wrote that, yes, it's a joke, and yes, there were kids in the audience, but little girls should kind of expect that boys will treat them in a shallow manner, and they should just deal with it. And that is not something that I would ever want. I have a son. I would never teach him anything like that or teach any other kids to treat women in that manner. We need to have some respect. I mean, everybody has mothers, right? Yeah. But even if you don't have a daughter, you have a mother. Treat people with respect is what my thought is here.
Yeah. The old argument that boys will be boys, I mean, we've heard this for so long, and I don't think it quite stands up in this situation. There were children there, I think the industry, for the most part, has agreed that we want to encourage young women to be involved in tech, at least, those are the leading stories we see. And then we say something, completely to the opposite that really does undermine. And I do have to compliment TechCrunch for their speedy rebuke of what happened at their conference. And one of the things I'd like to ask people, if something like that happens again, there are a number of things that the audience can actually do. And, to start thinking about, you could vote with your feet. You could simply get up and walk out. Or if somebody actually wanted to take a stronger position, somebody who actually could have just stepped in and said, you know what, enough is enough on this presentation. Let's go ahead and wrap it up.
Yeah.
I think that, this brings up my first question, mm-hmm. which is, why cloud now? And I think that, most people think, okay, it's the 21st century. Women have access to tech, tech careers. This is not an environment that can, drives girls to consider that this is a warm and fuzzy career path. And so I guess the question that I have for you, Jocelyn, is what is the role for Cloud Now and other organizations like Cloud Now in helping address these things more formally so that we can have an open and wider dialogue about these issues? I remember back in March where a woman felt uncomfortable about comments men were making about her at a tech conference. It blew up on Twitter. She got attacked for even raising the issue that she was uncomfortable. I don't know the details of that incident or, what that was all about, but, we need to be able to talk about this in an open forum.
Yeah. Well, with Cloud Now, we have really strove to be part of the industry conversation. I mean, we want to be in active dialogue with our male colleagues. So I think that that's at least a starting point for being able to have a platform to be able to say, there's a lot of subtleness that's going on with discrimination, but when things are so overt, to be able to call on our male colleagues to you know, to help us, to assist us in being able to, I would say, express just how demoralizing and how outrageous the behavior is. In fact, Seema was telling me that a number of her male colleagues at Instratus did just that, which I think is wonderful.
And organizations like Cloud Now or any other, you know, organizations that are focused on women, we need to continue encouraging girls to be in this industry, because I think that at this time we've got in front of us a great opportunity to make things better for them, right? If we rely on anybody else to make things better, it may not work out. But we've got an opportunity here to prove an example to them to make things better going forward for them.
Well, and I think that this is not, you know, the one thing to be clear about, this is not a male versus female issue. This is a misogynist versus modern thinking issue. And empowering people to feel like they can actually call folks out on ridiculous behavior.
Exactly.
So I guess the question becomes, when you look at something like this, are you surprised, Jocelyn, on where we find ourselves this week?
I have to say that I was absolutely shocked. I was prepared to come in here today, Allison, and talk with you about the subtle subtext of discrimination and women in tech, and to have something so egregious. I think it really wakes people up, and I hope it wakes up people listening to why this has become such a platform, because we do struggle with this, and it's very real. So, to be able to say it's not happening, it's just not correct.
Right. Yeah. It's been, I would have thought, you know, I've never encountered something so in the face, but this is in the face, right? And raising our voice and making sure that people understand that this is not okay, and for them to have this kind of behavior in the future is not okay as well, is going to help us going forward.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, the audience members, there was giggling. I heard that reports that, you know, people described it as celebratory when the presentation of Tit Stare was on the stage. And, you know, you can think about, if you were one of those people that was, you know, giggling nervously or just really didn't agree, I mean, that's a huge stance to start thinking about. What will you do the next time that happens? You know, sometimes you're put in a situation and it's so shocking that you don't even know how to react. But looking at this now and being able to do a postmortem, I really do hope there are lessons learned. And I, for one, would absolutely have no problem standing up and just walking out. It's doing something that simple.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, I've been spending my week not at TechCrunch, at the Intel Developer Forum. And, you know, the thing that I was thinking about when you mentioned this to me earlier, Jocelyn, is that, you know, we have this wealth of innovation that's going on. You know, we've got, you know, wealth of innovation across different compute platforms. The cloud is just changing the game in terms of how services are delivered. It's going to take the wealth of diversity of our technical resources to bring the full value of these technologies to consumers. And I think that, you know, I want to shift the focus, because I don't want to make this interview all about, oh my God, this is horrible. You know, where do we see the benefit in technology from added diversity? And you guys have some experiences where you know that the things that we're bringing to market, the technologies that have come, have benefited from multiple viewpoints.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think, you know, if you look at great teams and how they're built, you typically don't have all Stanford MBAs or all Wharton MBAs. I mean, just looking at examples of really powerful ecosystems, people do need to come from diverse backgrounds and have diverse perspectives, and that piece just makes good business sense to be able to bring together people who are going to share different points of view.
Yeah, and looking at like a great example is companies like Apple or Google, who, when they are designing products for the market, it's very important to them to have people on their teams that come from diverse backgrounds so that they get different perspectives when designing their products, and it appeals to everybody, not just one you know, faction of the society. Mm-hmm. So diversity helps it makes business sense, because then you're appealing to a wider audience, and that brings in revenue from that wider audience.
You know, I think that's one interesting thing that I noticed in today's presentations. We were talking about 2-in-1 PCs, which is basically the ability to turn a PC into a tablet. Mm-hmm. And they had a diverse set of these things on stage. You know, well, why? Interestingly enough, different countries have adopted different ways that they want to transition between PC and tablet. Who knows why? The slider is very popular in Japan. The flip over is very popular in the U.S. But even beyond that, you know, when you get to the actual services and the apps that are being delivered, you know, I was talking with Brian Johnson yesterday about the concept of privacy and how across society, we, you know, from culture to culture, we define privacy differently. China would have a different determination of that than the U.S., than would Europe. And without developers who have those different perspectives, or even gender or, you know, mm-hmm. socioeconomic perspectives on these types of issues, we're going to be delivering very biased products to the marketplace. Yeah. You know, one of the things that I remember talking to another guest on the program about before, Genevieve Bell, who's in Intel Labs, she's our keynoter tomorrow, was the concept that when she came to Intel, she was asked to figure out what women did with technology. Apparently, Intel engineers didn't really know at the time, but you know, it gave a good, she's a social scientist, a social anthropologist, gave a good indication that, you know, tech cannot just be designed as a form factor or a piece of hardware or a, you know, a piece of software that doesn't intuit the user. And so, you know, I think that, you know, that is one interesting thing for cloud now, I think, in terms of how not just, you know, the infrastructure that runs cloud, but also how cloud services get delivered, and that we keep, it seems like there is a risk here at TechCrunch that cloud services are trending more into a male-dominated world.
Yeah, well, I do think the TechCrunch thing will do a self-correct. I mean, I think it became so big that I think that it will actually raise the level of awareness on these kinds of issues, and to think about how, you know, with different, you know, people with different backgrounds using technology in different ways. So maybe it will even make it stronger.
So let's get to the cloud, because cloud now is about cloud. You know, we've been talking, Jocelyn, privately for years about cloud now and cloud computing. It seems like we've reached a maturity in cloud service delivery. Seems like enterprises are starting to drive more enterprise-ready apps into the cloud, which changes dynamics a bit. Where do you see the next couple years of cloud computing, and what technologies are you excited about? And Seema, I'd like to hear from you on this one as well.
Yeah, so I think cloud is you know, pervasive now, and it's driving the next level of compute. And I've written about this before in the sense that cloud is driving productivity. It's the coming together of cloud, big data, analytics, mobile, and sensors, and the ability to take information from sensors the Internet of Things is becoming more popular now. And why is it becoming more popular? Because now we have the technologies that make it easy to do compute on small form factors, to put sensors in everything, gather data, and that generates a lot of data. Then the ability to analyze that data using some of the big data technologies to create intelligence out of those things. So over the next couple of years, we're going to see more of wearables, more of home automation. But apart from the consumer market, there's also going to be this effect in the enterprise and the industrial space with GE, with its industrial internet, with Cisco, with its Internet of Everything, and some of the other companies like IBM with its Smarter Planet, focusing on this area, making things, putting sensors in things, gathering data from them, and making them more smarter.
Seema, I totally agree. So I think what's really going to be exciting is the Internet of Things, and then in the next several years out, really how that transitions us into the programmable world. And, you know, I think cloud was this amazing first step that really opened up the field of possibilities. And as the new technologies continue to converge, you know, being able to look at things as, you know, wearable devices. And I know that Samsung has gotten a lot of backlash over the form of their wearable device. And,
that's
we should.
I think that they probably did not have any women input, because I would never, ever wear that watch. It would not fit on my wrist.
But what I was going to say is that, you know, kind of these first generations, you know, it's seldom about really what it looks like, but what the technology can actually promise us. And there will be a core group of early adopters that become really passionate about it, and they'll actually impact the technology. So it will have a transformative effect. And then that feedback will be used in the next generation. So I see this convergence of, you know, wearable technologies, augmented reality. These things are going to be rolling up into what, you know, what the industry is calling the Internet of Things. And then, you know, to think about these next steps, when all of these major pieces of big data, social, mobile, cloud, predictive analytics, and the devices actually being able to communicate with each other, what our world is going to look like. And, you know, it gets very, very sci-fi very quickly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, I mean, the University of Washington has been given a grant of millions of dollars to do a mind-machine interface. So they are starting research on a mind-machine interface, right? And so now all of a sudden, Ray Kurzweil's singularity at 2040 doesn't look that bizarre anymore, mm-hmm. You know?
Yeah.
I think that we announced some new processors, the Quark line, which fits under Atom at, I think it's 1/10 the energy consumption of Atom. So perfect for the Internet of Things and wearables. We had some wearables on stage yesterday that were early form factors that were a little bit... well, let's just say they look like prototypes. But the more interesting one was something that Renee James showed, which was an EKG that you wore on your wrist, mm-hmm. and it replaced going to the doctor. Mm-hmm. But the more interesting thing was the next generation prototype, which was actually a patch that you wear,
oh, cool.
and it keeps track of your vitals for you and reports all of that information back. To the medical office.
Yeah.
You know, this is, you know, I think about wearables, and I think about it in the same way that the first time I heard about Facebook, mm-hmm. which was, why would I ever want this Facebook page? You know, what would I do with this? You just don't understand the use case until you start engaging in it. And I think wearables were the same thing.
Yes.
Like, why would I ever want to wear Google glasses? I don't want everybody to look at what I'm looking at. But then you start thinking about the way that it applies to your life.
Mm-hmm.
And you can see, you know, the myriad of uses that these technologies
so
will have.
So 5 years ago, I was working for a cloud startup, and we would tell people use case. So, you know, you would be able to have access to your pictures and your documents anywhere, any device. And so you kind of wrap your brain around, well, that's iCloud. Like, how many people have that now, right? but at the time, people were like, well, that's crazy. Why would I want that? You know?
Yeah, I've got my iPod.
Yeah.
What am I doing?
So I when I look at things like the media slamming Samsung Gear, to me it's just laughable, because, you know, all it's going to take is, you know, Burberry or Tommy Hilfiger or somebody to redesign it and make it fashionable, and then it's going to go crazy, and everybody's going to be like, well, of course you have to have that.
Yeah.
When they integrate a Fitbit into a pair of Manola Blahniks all the
way.
That's right. So beyond the Internet of Things and wearables, you know, from a enterprise infrastructure and enterprise delivery, what do you guys think is the next wave? Is it new ways of driving big data analytics? Is it infrastructure innovation? What's exciting to you guys?
So in terms of, you know, pure cloud right now, what I'm seeing is that there are still companies, you know, still trying to just move to the based on my experience at VMworld, people are still trying to just provide VMs to their end users. But I think that couple of years down the line, that, you know, that's going to be commonplace. Of course, we're going to, platforms are going to be what people use to drive productivity, right? Okay, and now it's like, okay, I need a machine, but then it's going to be, I need an environment. And we've been saying this for years, but it's still not there. People are still just, you know, moving slowly, and enterprise moves a bit slowly for whatever reason. And so platforms will be the key computing environment in which people operate in. In terms of, like I was mentioning about the internet, the industrial internet, for those companies that have actual physical devices, for them, hospitals or the travel industry, they'll be able to use these solutions, use sensors and the data they collect from them to have smarter planning, so that they don't waste time waiting for maintenance, or they're able to route their physical assets better. So there's going to be these two parallel things happening at the same time, where the companies that have more physical assets will get smarter, and people will start using these platforms to compute. Mm-hmm. Do you want to add?
Yeah, I agree. And you know, as our work life and our life continues to blend, and being able to look at some of these devices that will continue to be more and more connected, I think enterprise is big struggle. You know, we saw with the bring your own device, they were really caught, you know, IT was really caught back on its heels with BYOD. And so I think that, you know, with this next wave, it should really give IT a better sense of being able to plan, because it's going to be like this only 100 times more, right? And so for me, I think one of the exciting things is really how the IT industry is going to learn that lesson, and how they're going to plan to be able to react to an entirely new wave of devices that will be arriving through their door at work every day.
I think the IT organization is, rather than being a service provider, would become a service broker, in the sense that they will help their end users identify which services would be either the cheapest, fastest, whatever the business need is, that they should use, rather than, hey, you need to use our services.
So instead of running their own infrastructure, they could be modeling the best business applications, the best services that will help differentiate their business.
They could be running their own infrastructure as well. It just depends on the business need, but they don't need to be running their own infrastructure for everything. So what would satisfy the business need, and from where they would help identify that?
When I've talked to enterprise customers about this, it seems like nobody's ready to say, I'm going to, you know, shut down my data centers and push everything into the public cloud today. And in fact, with some of the innovations that are coming on platforms, it seems like the reach of running services at the efficiencies of a public cloud environment within an enterprise are in reach with some you know, forward-thinking IT operations. We had BMW on the stage today at a keynote. They just launched some new cars that had some Intel Inside in them. But, you know, one of the things that they've talked about before is the fact that they have a cloud journey that very much integrates public cloud and private cloud together. Mm-hmm. You know, transforming their IT operations completely over to, you know, very robust service-oriented architectures moving forward, but also implementing public cloud services where it makes sense.
You know, I remember about a year and a half ago, it was really unusual to hear people talk about the federated cloud and, you know, this whole concept that a particular business would have multiple clouds, on-prem, public, private. And now I think that's really being accepted as that, you know, an organization is going to be using cloud as a strategy. So they really do need to look at all of the options that they would have available. Mm-hmm. Do you agree?
And then there's some really interesting concepts around service orchestration. You know, I was listening to someone talk yesterday about the concept of follow the moon and, you know, moving your workload where it's the cheapest to run it at any given time because everybody's asleep. Mm-hmm. So, you know, we've had that concept in terms of developer engagement before, in terms of, you know, supporting supporting work, but not necessarily cloud services. So I thought that was a really interesting concept around how we can drive down the cost of IT even further, sometimes on-prem, sometimes off-prem, depending on time of day.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. That's an amazing concept.
So actually, my background, my enterprise background is with Hewlett-Packard, and that was one of the things Lab was working on about 10 years ago, was this whole follow the moon concept. And it was largely around, you know, using solar energy and, optimizing data centers based on time of day, climate, and all of those other kinds of things. So I think it's a great step in the right direction.
So it's amazing how ideas that we've heard about years ago, they go away, and then all of a sudden it's like, it's ready, and it's like, what happened?
Somebody was working on this. Well, I think that's partly, you know, all of the technology is finally in place, and also the attitudes people hold now and the types of things that they feel are really important. Mm-hmm. You know, you've got companies like GreenCloud that are really, defining themselves on this whole environmentally friendly message. And I don't know if, you know, just even a few years ago, if that would have mattered.
Right. So we're coming to the end of the interview. I know that we've probably sparked interest across a lot of topics. If folks want to continue the conversation with you guys, what's the best way to get in touch with you?
They can go ahead and email me at jocelyn@cloud-now.org, and I'd love to hear from them.
People can find me on Twitter, and my Twitter handle is @SeemaJ, SEEMAJ.
Fantastic. Well, thank you guys so much for being on the program. It's been a delight. We've covered, you know, the gamut of topics from technology to politics. So very nice conversation, and hope to have you back on the show soon.
Thank you,
Allison. Thank you for having us.
Thank you, Intel.
Thank you, Intel.